Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I'm Kyle, the Student of the Game, and to my left, with me once again, Chris and Weasel, ready to bring you more off-season action. This show is going to be so hot. It's going to be so hot like it was stolen. Wait, is that a cheesy pun off of some sort of a Russian leader? Maybe. I don't know. It wouldn't be the first time we talked about it on this show, because I remember back, I mean, look, let's be clear. We've been doing this show for a long time. Maybe we weren't talking about it on a podcast, or actually, well, maybe we were, because this will be seasons, whatever. The point is this. This is not old news on the Student of the Game, but lo and behold, 8, 7, whatever years later, Patriots owner Robert Kraft brings up a particular incident where he was traveling with other business leaders to Russia. And so we happened upon the premier there, so to speak, the president of Russia, if you will, the head politician of Russia, Vladimir Putin. Does anybody else laugh a little bit when they say that name, by the way?
Putin.
I'm just saying. Anyway, so Putin asks to see the ring. So Robert Kraft, you know, being a essentially, I mean, a de facto foreign dignitary, takes off the Super Bowl ring, hands it to Vladimir Putin. Vladimir Putin puts it on his hand first. First of all, it says, I could kill someone with this ring. I don't know. It's a big ring. I mean, look, I have my championship ring from when I played semi-pro football. It's a big ring, too. I mean, I can only imagine that Robert Kraft's ring would be bigger. I digress. So then, in perhaps one of the most smooth, shady actions ever done by an international dignitary of any sort, Putin proceeds to take the ring off his left hand and slide it very gently into his pocket. It was subtle as hell if you see the video. And then as he walks off, escorted by 3 KGB agents, there is Robert Kraft barehanded, if you will. Now, I don't know what you guys, I don't know when Weasel and I may have talked about it way back in the day, but Chris, let me get kind of your reaction to that first. I mean, because I understand it, that ring is still in a museum somewhere in Russia. How do you pull this off? No pun intended. Well, actually, he didn't pull it off. It was handed to him. But how does that happen? What?
KGB.
Well, I mean, the agents were present. That's true. In Mother Russia, ring steal you, right?
Is that how you're American in Russia with KGB around you? You think you're going to bring up the ring?
You know, the 80s called. The Cold War is over. I mean, so you think. Good call, right? I mean, I thought we were all friends now. I thought everything was a democracy now, right? I mean, Weasel, am I wrong here or what?
Well, it's just kind of funny that when the guy's walking away, it's like, what's he going to do? I want my ring back. Please? I mean, he's in Russia. He's in St. Petersburg. So it's like, I mean, he must have been just like, you know, dead in his tracks. Like, what do I do? And I guess he contacted the president at the time.
One of his handlers, yeah.
Yeah, talked to George Bush. And he's like, I don't think this is good for international relations, so you should just call it a gift and move on.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I know it would have caused an international incident. And, you know, I understand why the office of the president, I don't think it was Bush directly that got a hold of him, but the office of the president said, dude, let that mess slide. Buy a new ring. We'll give you a tax credit. Everything. I don't know. That part's
alleged. World War III is not worth it.
Well, I know World War III isn't worth it. I agree with you, Weasel. But here's my whole thing. You know, that would have been a hell of a YouTube video if Bob Kraft goes, oh, hell no.
Just tackles him.
You know, and as I wired together my post-apocalyptic computer that's made out of, like, toasters and you know, old vacuum ray tubes, I would have loved watching that on YouTube if the internet were still functioning that day. I'm just saying. Anyways, so, you know, the news of the silly out of the way there, too. I felt like I had to bring up that ring story because I remember talking about it in the past, if not at least writing about it. Hell, I don't remember if it was in a podcast or not, and what can I say? I'm too lazy to go that far back through the archives. But, you know, speaking of things that feel lazy or entirely too lazy, gentlemen, between now and our past show, a funny thing happened in the city of Foxborough. Weasel, you know what to do.
Tebow, 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 Tebow.
See, my dude's had a cough for like a month and a half and still whips out the Tebow. I mean, whips out the Tebow. Probably not the best. Well, what I'm trying to get to is this. So, lo and behold, Tim Tebow has a freaking job now with the Patriots. Now, can we all be in agreement off the bat that people are talking about him as the number three quarterback? No. 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 Let's do what Putin should have done with the ring. Oh, hell no, right? I mean, come on. People have used the word quarterback competition. Like, okay, no one's done. Well, I shouldn't say no one. I haven't heard anyone dumb enough to claim that he can challenge Brady. Let's be clear. As many jokes as I tell about Tom Brady being knocked on his butt by an official in a conference championship Sunday game. Yeah, that's still funny. I'm sorry. No offense, Robin, if you're listening. But I can't think that that's even a discussion. Let's be clear. I don't think Tim Tebow has a shot against Ryan Mallett. Hands, anybody? Okay, didn't think so. Yeah, I appreciate that you're saying no. Yeah, this is radio, chance. Not TV. That's right.
And I'm wondering about the rules for a practice squad. Now, is he eligible for a spot in the practice squad?
Oh, of course. Of course. Absolutely. I mean, the way that works is I don't know that he'd have the same contract necessarily. I don't know that much about it. But you have so many people on your regular roster, and then you can put so many people on the practice squad. And I think what Weez was trying to set up is the kind of story where you get like a – you know, instead of, you know, it'd be kind of like Rudy, except instead of Rudy, it would be Tebow, right? Well, no, that's basketball because the Spurs are playing tomorrow night. But, you know, that aside, now I'm all thrown off. I thought I was so smooth by bringing up Tim Duncan right there. Now I completely lost my train of thought. No, but what I'm getting is he's not going to beat Ryan Mallett in the number two spot. That's not going to happen either. I think, you know, we mentioned earlier that we don't think that's going to happen. So that leads one to believe he's going to at least attempt to do something else on the team. Chris, I'll throw it to you first. You have Tebow. You have the Pat squad. What do you do? Pop quiz, hot shot. What do you do? What do you do?
What you do is you take last year's playbook and the year before playbook, and wherever Danny Woodhead was, you put Tebow in that position.
Interesting. Interesting. See, you know, I've heard worse ideas. Wood has probably a little faster than him, I'll grant.
Right.
But Tebow's got, you know, a ton more beef. I mean, that's blatantly obvious, right?
245 pounds and he's 6'3", yeah.
236 according to his roster stat.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, all I know is that's way more than Danny Woodhead. I think Danny Woodhead was like 180, something like that. I don't know. Yeah. Chris will
I'll pull it up here in a second.
But what I'm getting to is this. Whether it be 30 or 50 pounds that Woodhead's giving up, Tebow's a bigger guy. Granted, he's a little taller than I'd like for a running back, but hey, anything's possible. Just ask Eddie George.
200 right? even.
200 even. Okay, so 30-plus pounds heavier. I don't know that he's 30-plus pounds slower, but, you know, whatever. That's a different topic. See, but what I'd come back to is this. On the roster right now, despite the fact that Bolden didn't show up for practice or mandatory minicamps, or there's talk that he won't show up for that, which I don't get in the slightest. They got six running backs on the roster right now. So you got Tebow, and you have six other running backs on the roster already. I don't get it. I'm a little confused there. However,
you actually got seven listed here.
Well, are you counting Tebow yet?
No, not counting Tebow yet.
Okay, we'll crank them off for the listening audience.
Okay,
there.
You got LeGarrette Blount.
Yep.
Brandon Bolden, James Devlin, rookie Quentin Hines, Stephen Ridley, Shane Vereen, and Leon Washington.
Excuse me, that's Stevon Ridley. Just kidding. He calls himself Stephen, but I just love saying Stevon. What can I say? Stevan. No, that whatever. I don't know. Your being Stephen makes more better than Stevan. See, you're Steven. Actually, you're Weasel, but that's different. Anyways. See, I think now our audience finally knows what your first name is because I've done that.
Oh, no.
They foiled my secret. Kyle, it's my secret identity. Supervillains everywhere will know who I am. My family's in danger. Weasel's just looking at me with the dumbest smile. Kyle, you are so stupid.
Weasel's his last name.
That's right. It's Stephen Weasel, care of... No. anyway, so... Okay, so the Woodhead defense is good. But 7 running backs on the roster, not even counting Tebow, makes that a little tough for me to withstand. So the other piece I've submitted before is the tight end defense, so to speak, right? At one point, going a number of years back, former Jacksonville Jaguar tight end Kyle Brady filled in very nicely, short-range packages, and for blocking schemes. Brady to Brady. Wasn't terrible. Did the job. I think Tebow fits there. However, I'm going to ask you this, Weasel.
Mm-hmm.
For that minute of a contribution, is Tebow worth picking up at that point?
For the tight end position?
Yeah.
Well, Gronkowski is coming off of back surgery, so...
Well, actually, yeah, I think he just had it this past Thursday.
No, he has it scheduled tomorrow.
Tomorrow, okay. Yeah. So he ain't coming off of. It's about to happen.
Okay, right. Okay. I thought he had it already.
Yeah, I did too.
But, yeah, they still got Gonzalez, but I think having him play
Hernandez,
a little tight...
Yeah, Hernandez.
Yeah.
Or the other Spanish guy.
Racist.
So it's all about Tebow's willingness. He said he'll do whatever it takes to to be on the team and do whatever they want to do.
Right.
But I think he could be a tight end. He's athletic, and I kind of see him more. I think it would be, I don't know, do they run with a fullback
at times?
I think he would be a good fullback.
You think he'd be a good fullback? See, and I've
Locking,
heard that defense too. Right.
And with Tom Brady, he could throw maybe some trick plays, and he could run the ball.
Now, here's the thing I want to bring to you, too. And what you mentioned about the trick plays feeds right into it. And now, this is something you scolded me for back when it happened, but I was still right. Reggie Bush, as a rookie, for his first 6 games, did not have a single touch to speak of, really. Didn't really touch the football. However, and you remember it just as well as I do, whenever Bush was on the field, he'd go to a particular side of the field. That defense would plague, fester about on that side of the field where Bush was, and the play was going the other way the whole damn time. The best decoy for that season by far was one Reggie Bush. Now, what I'm thinking is, you got all this Tebow hype. You got Weasel calling up his Tebow chant. You got all this going on where NFL Network, ESPN, and everybody's like, oh, Tebow. And then, you got Robert Kraft even talking about dealing with famous people like Tebow, bringing up Russian presidents, stealing his ring. It's crazy. You better bet that psychologically there's an opportunity for opposing teams, especially for weaker defensive staffs, such as, say, maybe, I don't know, the Jets or the Bills or something like that, to overreact to a particular side against Tebow if he's on the field. You fake a pass to him, you then look down the field to, I guess now it would be Amendola or Hernandez or one of those other 7 running backs. I mean, that's pretty much what they got on offense, which is the other best defense. They don't have that many weapons on offense. Somebody who's a good football player to be added to the squad makes sense. I mean, I don't know. Help me out, Chris, the whole decoy concept. You're a dude who's come up with some creative stuff. I mean, this is a cat who had a 7-on-7 flag kitty team defense. Was it 7-on-7? How many were on the field? I don't know. When you were coaching with...
I think it was 7 or 8. I think it might have been 8.
Okay. 8-on-8 flag football team with kids. What was it? 6th graders or something?
Fourth to 6th grade.
Fourth to 6th. And he has a play with a cutback block written in, which, I mean, not to mention it was awesome. But this is, you're known for coming up with creative stuff. You have Tebow and the Patriots offense. What do you do?
I already said I'd put him in the Woodhead spot.
Well, okay, so you have the Woodhead defense. Right. I mean, that's the best you got. Weasel says fullback. I've said tight end. This is 3 different places that he could be used.
Maybe special teams. I think him being a gunner or whatever, getting off kickoffs or punt returns.
Right.
I think he would be good because he's got decent speed. He's got good awareness. And none of that, I think he was when he was with the Jets, the guy, I don't know what you call him, when the guy right in the middle.
The punt protector.
Yeah, the punt protector right in the middle, yeah. He played that. I don't think something like that. So
under his defense, he did take the inside guy.
He did it right.
On that one, he did it right. There was three guys coming, so he can't block all three guys, and he took the inside guy, which he did.
So, yeah, so let's stop for a minute there. And that's a good point, Chris. He gets a lot of flack. You know, I could see the Jet fans already. I'm not going to do a New York accent. I'm not good at it. But, you know, oh, Tom Brady, he already blocked the punt, but he didn't, you know, he didn't. He should have blocked a guy that blocked the punt. Again, Chris said it right. Three busted through the middle. He took the inside guy. He took the guy with the shortest route, and the other one got in and blocked the punt. That ain't Tebow, and I think you're right there. That's certainly something. There were a number of punts blocked early in the season just from garbage blocking jobs in general. Tebow's was correct. He did his job. I'm glad you brought that up. I'd kind of forgotten that that had happened. So, I mean, we've established that he could be a blocking presence. He's got good mobility. He's got good size. He's a good tweener-type player. And let's put it this way. The Patriots have a history of using guys in utility fashion, right? We can go as far back as Troy Brown, receiver doubling as a corner, right? Had three interceptions, for crap's sake, in the regular season, I believe it was. You got Mike Vrabel as a linebacker being a tight end. You got Richard Seymour doubling as a fullback, as a defensive end, right? Then, you know, we won't talk about all the stuff they've done with Hernandez. They got him at the tight end spot. They got him lining up wide. They had him lining up at the backfield. I mean, versatility at its finest. I mean, but the difference there is everybody was good at their primary position. They weren't a jack of all trades, as one Tim Tebow. So let me ask you this. There's a theory out there, albeit a theory out there, that Tebow is going to be viewed as a multi-year project and kept at the third quarterback spot. You know, I mean, hey, if in the meantime Bob Crabb happens to continue to fill up Foxborough or other stadiums as he goes about the business and make a little money off him, maybe get some jersey sales, fair enough. I'm with that. What I'm trying to say is this. There's a theory out there that offensive coordinator and former Denver Broncos head coach, in fact, the guy that drafted Tebow
in the first round.
Thank you, Weasel. Is, of course, right, got Josh McDaniel on that staff, and that he knows how to reach Tebow. And he is able, might be able to help him with Belichick's help, make him into a serviceable quarterback. Weasel, you buying?
Well, supposedly.
Allegedly.
There's a guy, Steve Clarkson. He was like one of those quarterback gurus. And he, in the offseason, he helped out Tebow with his throwing motion. But the problem that he had was something to do with his footwork.
Right.
So that supposedly is helping him out. And for the future and all, I think he, for once, something we didn't touch on is that he can actually sit back and learn. Now, one thing that he had that he didn't have with the Jets, didn't have with the Broncos, is the media swarming over him.
Well, hold on. He did have the media swarming over him with the Jets. I mean, this was the guy who, as a backup quarterback, had a damn... Oh, he did?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so you're saying the other way. Okay.
I'm saying with the Patriots...
I misheard you, my bad.
Belichick has pretty much control... He has his control over the media.
The Patriot way, if you will, yeah.
And so Tebow's going to be able to learn behind him and behind Brady. He's got Belichick, and he's got McDaniel.
And Clarkson, so, as you mentioned there too, right?
Tebow, he's set on being, he wants to be a quarterback. But, I mean, with Tebow, I think he's had like a learning disability. And I think it was actually Chad Johnson couldn't get he had trouble learning the playbook for the Patriots. So, I mean, I don't know if they want him to be the future, but I mean, that if they can keep him as a third and if he can sit back and learn without all those distractions, you never know. He could be the future, but that's a long shot.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, too, because this is a point I'm looking to make often here. And, Chris, I'll transition to you in a minute here. So you look at, I mean, what he had in Denver, I'm not going to even touch that right now yet. What I'm going to say is this. With the Jets, Sperano. Yeah, no, he's not going to teach anybody to be a good quarterback. I mean, because Chad Henne was so great. Right. Anyways, Rex Ryan is a defensive guy. There's really not an opportunity there for quarterback training. I mean, Chris, Tebow's hopes. I mean, what thought you of Tebow's hopes trying to elevate to be a serviceable quarterback anywhere else, or even with the Patriots? I mean, do you see any hope there at all? Now, I'll grant this. You cite Steve Clarkson as a quarterback coach, Weasel, who I've never heard of, I'll be honest. But I have heard of Chris Winkie. And the fact that somebody decided that Chris Winkie, who's over 18, is an NFL starter and thought that was a good idea to develop a guy, I think that's another Jets maneuver.
He works with him.
That's a recipe for success. Over 18. Booyah. Chris, what say you?
Yeah, he really had no chance to get worked out with the Jets. Mm-hmm. There was no one there that could have helped him. But, you know, everyone says his passing motion is, I think, whatever. It's mostly his footwork, like Weasel said.
Right.
You know, he had one of the top completion percentage in college football history on there. So you're saying his throwing mechanics and everything, but look at his passing percentage. It's off of, he's like number two. Number one was Sam Bradford.
Yeah, well.
In the history of college football.
And
with passer rating on that. I'm looking up passer percentage right now.
Right. Well, I mean, let's be clear. Passer rating, when you're running a spread offense in college with an SEC athletic team that's built on speed and can outrun virtually everyone you play, and also factors in games against, you know, the Puerto Rican bobsled team, all right, and stuff like that. I mean, your stats can get blown up quite a bit. There were some throws he made that were really bad when he was a Bronco. There were some throws he made which were downright perfect when he was a Bronco. The problem is you get one or the other, never in the middle or in between. What do you got, Chris?
Yeah, I'll say 50% of the time it works all the time.
Yeah, right. No, but see, here's where I'm at with the tutelage of Tim Tebow. And this is the part of it that's an unfortunate tragedy that makes him a, I don't want to say victim, but a sympathetic figure in my eyes. So Tebow's in Denver. They go 1-4. Kyle Orton, by way of fan billboard and otherwise, is essentially voted off the island and onto the bench. In comes Tebow ahead of then Brady Quinn. Which, by the way, if you're Brady Quinn, how bitter are you? I'm just saying. Anyway, so they essentially turn their offense into like kind of a wishbone option thing. It's certainly run first, to say the least, right? They have their success. They do what they do. They win that playoff game. Belichick murders them, as everybody thought would happen. And we get our little piece there of Tebow's success, which, off of which he is still banking. I mean, Forbes magazine has him as a, you know, excellent business commodity and all this other garbage. So what I'm thinking is you have then Peyton Manning come in. So now if you're the GM, you think this kid really wants to learn. This kid has showed flashes of winning. No one will be dumb enough. Well, as a GM, you have to be confident that no one will be dumb enough to question Peyton Manning. Although that being said, I remember that my prognosis going into that season was if he makes it past game one, he'll be a success. And lo and behold, did he crush the Steelers defense that I was afraid would crush him. But I digress. A lot to be said for a quarterback who averages 1.7 seconds per release. Instead, so I have a quarterback in Tebow that has an offensive coordinator with the wherewithal to change the playbook to fit him, who was smart enough to build an offense around his players. Let me say that again. Build an offense around his players, right? Because more often, what do you hear about? Coach is looking for players to fit his system. I think the smarter coach personally picks the system to fit his players, right? Just me. Then you have John Fox, who really has the cojones to pick him over Brady for Brady Quinn to get the start. So you have a good quarterback that could teach well. You have a guy who wants to learn really bad. You have a coaching staff who could support. But instead, you draft Brock Osweiler in the fourth round and send Tebow packing. Now, call me conspiracy theorist, and let me be clear. I appreciate this man as a quarterback, but I think John Elway's ego got in the way a bit here. I mean, guys were looking at Tebow's stats as a first-year starter and comparing them to Elway's and pointing out in every which way to Sunday how he was quote-unquote better statistically than Elway. Now, let's be clear. Anyone with half a football mind knows that those numbers were garbage. The thing I hate the most that I've seen lately on the mothership, as they call it, the four-letter network that spells out ESPN, is this show called Numbers Don't Lie. Yeah, they do. A lot. Because those numbers said, allegedly, that Tebow was better than Elway. Let's not be stupid. However, there are reports. There are reports abound, rumors, this word around a campfire is, so to speak, that Elway is kind of what you call an egotistical guy. And that concept that he was being overshadowed didn't go too well with him. I'm not saying that's the case, but the evidence certainly supports that with that system in place, in a situation where Tebow is supported, he gets shipped out anyway. Which is why now he's going to be a complete and total waste of space on the Patriots squad. I mean, let's be clear, gentlemen. The truth is this. He ain't made the team yet. And contracts are not guaranteed, right? So, I mean, I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at. And, gentlemen, let's go ahead. We're going to hit the break a little early here. You are listening to the American Football Radio Network.
This is American Football Radio.
Welcome to American Football Radio. What can I say? Kyle, the student of the game, Chris and Weasel here, ready to give you the back half of the show just a little bit early. We talked about contracts just a second ago and how Tebow's is not guaranteed and a really big contract check. Well, not necessarily in terms of cash, but certainly in magnitude for the Giants franchise anyway. Victor Cruz finally puts pen to paper, ink to paper, and puts down the signature. We have a tender signed for one Victor Cruz. Chris, first of all, as the Giants fan in the room, let us know what you think.
And we said 2 weeks ago that he was going to sign, just a matter of days or whatever. He kind of signed because I think today went from the $2.8 million to would be the $600,000 the tender would be. It's a big difference.
$2.8
yeah.
to $600,000.
Right.
Just so everybody heard that. Okay.
So, I mean, it gets him in there, gets him in training camp, and he can still work out on that long-term deal if there is one. So, I mean, the Giants are going to need to do one because next year they got Hakeem Nicks, who's going to be a free agent as well, unrestricted. So they can't really afford to have Hakeem Nicks and Victor Cruz as unrestricted free agents after this year.
Fair enough. Weasel, I see you got your piece of paper going. Rocket, what do you got for me?
Yeah, he pretty much had to take the $2.9 million. I mean, he had no choice because what Chris was talking about, it was $630,000, which is a pretty big cut. So,
good Lord, that's a lot of money.
I mean, the guy had, I think for the past two seasons, it was 2,600 yards with 19 touchdowns. So that's pretty productive. And
how is it usually put it, Weasel? It's some very wise axiom you usually. Oh yes. That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. So, but he's an important part of their offense, and I mean, he says he's worth. I think he was looking for around $9-10 million, but
over the life of his contract. Let's be clear. Yeah.
So, we'll see if he can get a contract that both could agree on. So,
see. Here's my whole thing. And I want to put this very carefully. I can appreciate the chess game, if you will, of getting that 1 year out of Victor Cruz, right? Because in the Giants' point of view, Weasel says he's looking for this much. You know, what was it? Like $9 or $10 million over the life of his contract. Let's say he signs a 3-year contract. That's about 3-point-something mil right there that they'd be on the hook for, right? I don't know what the guaranteed money would be, but what I'm getting to is this. 2.8 whatever is less than $3 million. $600,000 is damn sure less than $3 million. So by getting him to sign this tender, the Giants, as a business, are saving money. Let's just put it that way, right? However, and let me put this to you guys, long term, because we've seen the Flacco, we've seen the Romo, And by extension, we've seen the Rodgers, you know, which is obviously a lot more warranted than the other two names. You got Victor Cruz in a situation where he wants a long-term deal. You don't give it to him now. And you're risking next year him hitting the free market and being worth more, possibly. This is kind of a dangerous risk game in my mind. I mean, Chris, let me start with you. As far as the politics go, was it worth the money to lock him up for those 3 years and play a slight increase this year to the 2.83?
Yeah, I mean, he's still young. What is his third year in the league?
I think it's fourth, but yeah.
Right.
In other words, I mean, he's in his prime.
Right. You know, you lock it up now. He hasn't really seen the injury bug hit him like Hakeem Nicks and other receivers that you see coming through. I'd say lock him in and, you know, lock him in now for the next 3 years, 4 years.
And so then you're not paying a premium for him later, possibly, too, or possibly seeing him leave. Weasel, what say you?
Yeah, I agree with Chris.
Okay. Because, I mean, overall, I agree with you guys as well. Don't get me wrong. But let me throw this to you. They have Reuben Randle. Nicks is, he's on a different squad now. But they have Reuben Randle. They have, or not Nicks, I'm sorry. Hickson is gone.
Yeah, Hickson
Nicks
is gone.
Nicks is still, Nicks, Hicks, whatever. Fine. Hickson is gone. Nicks is still there. But they have Reuben Randle. And they have, all I can think is Terrell Thomas, and that is not the cat's name. They have another receiver, Chris.
Ramses Barden.
Ramses Barden.
Jarrell Jernigan. Lewis Murphy they just picked up in the offseason.
Oh, and they got Lewis Murphy too. Fine. So, Reuben Randle, Ramses Barden. Right. So, there are receivers to spare, and your cap is currently hit by one Eli Manning. That's a pretty damn big cap hit. It was the biggest cap hit of 2012, as a matter of fact, amongst franchises. What I'm getting to is this. Do they keep Cruz the one more year, eliminate the risk, and if Cruz asks for too much, you ship him? I mean, because let's be real, guys. What would you call the biggest problem on the Giants roster? Let me go with you first, Chris. What's the biggest problem position-wise on the Giants roster?
I'd say secondary linebacker core.
I would have said linebacker myself. Weasel, what say you?
Linebacker.
You know how none of us said receiver? Catch that? I would have even accepted O-line.
I mean, Randall was pretty productive last year.
Reuben was very productive. Ramses Barden had some moments. Dominic Hickson, when he's playing, is badass.
You mean Hakeem Nicks?
Damn it, I did it again. Take two. Oh, shoot, we're live. Hakeem Nicks, thank you, Chris. When he's on the field, he's badass. I like Dominic Hickson, too. Unfortunately, he's a Panther, as I understand it. So, Victor Cruz is becoming expendable. And, like, the way I've been comparing this negotiation is like Drew Brees with the Saints, which, upon further review, is actually a very poor comparison. That's right. Unlike most sports media guys, I'm calling myself out. That's not a good analogy. Because it's not like the Saints could put Jace Daniel onto the field. Yeah, I know he's not with the Saints anymore. I know he's backing up Alex Smith. But what I'm trying to say is, at the time, what were they going to do if they didn't sign Drew Brees? Bring in Chase Daniel? The Giants, however, are in the unique position where they have options. So I guess what they're gambling on is that Victor Cruz will either have some sort of an injury or bring his production down. Now, because, Weasel, you cited excellent numbers to start with. If those numbers taper, it's an excuse to bring a little bit less to the table.
I think Eli Manning will just have to throw to him less towards the end of the season.
Oh, you think that's how
it's going? If it gets too high, you know, the coach will just tell him, hey, don't throw it to him as much. Get some more to Randle. So
we'll run the ball more. Oh, wait, we don't have Bradshaw anymore. Damn it. You know, we'll run the ball more. No, I that's kind of where I think the term I want to think of is calculated risk. I don't necessarily like it, but I see where they're going, especially since Victor Cruz had at least two, if not three, I can think of two right away, passes of greater than 50 yards that decided games in 2012. Now, I know the Giants didn't make the playoffs, but they had a shot. Those two games were important in keeping them in the race. I don't know.
See, I would go, if you have a choice between keeping Victor Cruz or Joaquin Nix, both of them, I would keep Victor Cruz right now because of the injuries that Joaquin Nix has had the last 2 years.
Right.
And they're basically almost the same, like, size of player. I mean, Victor Cruz 6 foot to Joaquin Nix 6'1", 204 to 208. So it's not much of a difference there. So I would go personally with it because Joaquin Nix contract's up next year. I would sign Victor Cruz now for the longer term than with Joaquin Nix.
Okay. And I can see why they're holding off on Nix, because they got another year to see what he can do. And if his injury is really going to affect him, I mean, you know, that's certainly a risk for any player that faces a major injury, let's be clear, you know. So, anyways, earlier I mentioned Ahmad Bradshaw. Well, Ahmad Bradshaw was featured recently on the waiver wire, or the free agency wire, or news, or whatever. He got picked up by the Colts. Wiz, let me go to you. Bradshaw to the Colts on that offense. Thoughts?
I think it's a big deal. He'll be good for like a goal line short yardage situation. So
it's kind of a big deal.
No? Yeah.
I mean, well, let's put it this way. Name the last significant runner, emphasis on runner the Colts have had. Either of you, go ahead.
Edgerrin James.
At least Edgerrin.
I would like someone to mention Dominique Rhodes, at least in passing, please. Yeah. But yes, correct. In other words, it's been a minute.
Joseph Addai.
Joseph Addai was a better blocker than he was a runner, but he gets points, I'm sure, too. Vic Ballard has made a difference. Hell, he has two very crucial plays in the fourth quarter in two of Luck's seven comebacks in 2012. But the truth is this, he's more known for catching the ball in the backfield than he is running the football. Ahmad Bradshaw runs the football. Now, I get it. He's 30, and that's a bad age and all this.
He's actually only 27.
Yeah.
Oh, well, what do I know?
Yeah. But they also have Delwan Carter on there.
you just wanted to say Delwan, didn't you?
That's right.
But yes, I mean, let's put it this way. Whether you're 27 or 30, the smart thing to do, and we've talked about this often, the smart thing to do if you're an NFL franchise is to have a committee system. I mean, hell, even Steven Jackson is going to be part of a committee system as he goes to Atlanta to join Quiz Rogers and others. But here's where I'm kind of torn. Donnie Avery, no longer a receiver for the Colts. And though everybody talked about Marvin Harrison and Eugene Ty Hilton, Donnie Avery was an excellent number three that nobody really seemed to remember. Of course, Corey Fleener, fellow Stanford rookie with Andrew Luck, was a tight end, did a pretty decent job as well. Where I'm going is, does Avery's departure get balanced out by Bradshaw in your mind? Chris?
No, I don't think so, because of who they have. Lavon Brazil came on strong last year towards the end of the year. He's still on the roster. They did pick up Darius Heyward-Bey to fill in that little slot with that speed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because he's done fast. So much.
Right. But, I mean, well, look who he had in Oakland.
Okay. And that's a fair point. That's a fair point.
They picked up another receiver from Baylor that was one of was there when RG3 was there. So, mm-hmm. Got some speed. Baylor all they had was speed at receiver. So
you know, you mentioned Raider quarterbacks. So I'm gonna give a pop quiz here. Pop quiz, Weasel. Who would you rather have starting quarterback for your team, Tim Tebow or Terrell Pryor? You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
No, I just had to make that joke. You laughing said everything.
All right.
I don't know. The answer's Pryor, right?
No. Yeah.
No, I mean, I kid, but I mean, you know, there's another guy who needs to play multiple positions just like Tebow. Anyways, so back to the Colts. I think to an extent, too, what has to be measured is balance. Don't really feel like the Colts had any. You had a rookie quarterback who had at least a 4,000-yard season throwing last year in Luck. Had an excellent rookie season. Certainly competed for Rookie of the Year.
I believe he was my rookie. No. He was my rookie of the year until the very last week. Chris did pick him. I was about to pick him until, you know, RG3 went RG3 and actually got the Redskins to the playoffs, mind blown, and all of that. I mean, let's just put it this way. Weapons can certainly never hurt a guy, especially when every other team in the NFL now has 16 games of film on you. And sophomore slump is something that's known as a curse and a mental stigma that all rookies, whether they're successful or not, have to deal with, of course. Successful ones more than non-successful ones and all of that. So there's something else I saw, and I mean, I'm really kind of digging into the Wayback Machine here. All of 2 years, and it's the Wayback Machine, right? But do you gentlemen remember in 2010, the Philadelphia Eagles were starting one Kevin Kolb? Mm-hmm. And well, as always seems to have happened lately, this was the first instance where Kevin Kolb was knocked out of the game very quickly, and Michael Vick came in, did a fantastic job in 2010, went an immense amount of games without an interception. Your wife's Bears Weasel was the first game he threw an interception against. I think it was like 8 games in or something ridiculous like that. But there was a part where Vic got hurt. Kolb came back in. That was all what it was. The Eagles did what they did in 2010 and all that. 2011, there was a certain quarterback that declared his team with the Eagles the dream team. Yeah, not so much, obviously. That was, of course, Vince Young. When Vic got hurt in 2011, Vince Young came in to back him up and looked so bad. They were looking for a young man who looked great in the offseason. One, Mike Kafka. No one remembers this name, but they should because he had all... Well, in Philadelphia, you might. But this kid had all sorts of hype. He was a kid who had, you know, an ability to run and an ability to throw. He was definitely a threat all over the dang place. Now, he looked decent to start with and then eventually flopped. I mean, that's just what happens. But now his name's surfacing again, and he's going to Jacksonville, where the fans of Jacksonville at the quarterback spot, other than Kafka, have Chad Henne and, of course, Blaine Gabbert. The agony of the fans expressed here in their owner, Shaz Khan. I have been waiting weeks to use that way. Anyways. Thank you, William Shatner. Anyways, so what I'm getting to is this. Does Mike Kafka legitimately start at all for the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2013? I'll start with you, Weasel.
I'd say no.
No, not even going to see not one start in the year.
I'd say he'll come in like towards the end of a game, but I don't see a start.
Garbage time. Chris.
I would say no because Jacksonville is planning on going with 2 quarterbacks on the roster. And I don't think it'll be Blaine Gabbert and Chad Henne probably on the roster.
Okay. Well,
so he might be on a practice squad there. I mean, they do have 2 other rookie quarterbacks on there because there's a total of 5 on the roster right now. Mm-hmm. But unless one of them goes down and injured, or both of them go down and injured, I don't see it because how they're liking Chad Henne right now in the camp.
Yeah, well, and let's put it this way. Henne for a while was a darling last year until he started to do bad as well himself. That being said, you know, I can see where you're going. They got other quarterbacks on the roster. They got some rookies coming in. They want to see if Mike Kafka can impress them, all that. You know, I'll put it this way. Like I said, he did look good in the preseason with the Eagles 2 years ago, but that really doesn't mean anything now, obviously. Will he be a starter? Hearing what I hear now about the amount they have on the roster, there's no way you can predict that. Probably not. Especially, you know, they're even talking about Denard Robinson in some sort of a freaking wildcat package. I mean, goodness gracious, what's going to happen there? Or, I mean, you know, will Denard Robinson be the emergency number 3 quarterback? Who knows? I have no idea. That being said, you know, these other 2 quarterbacks, I assume, are pretty young they have on the roster there, Chris?
Yeah, they're both rookies.
Okay, so I mean, you know, the one advantage to Kafka would be his experience. Now, at this point, you know, again, I'm more bringing it up because the name Mike Kafka is kind of a "Where Are They Now" piece. I know we talked about him on this show some, but yeah, not lately, not since. I know I talked to him about him some talking on WTMY with Tom Kernan, but it's the Eagles, and Tom and I talked a lot of Eagles, and no, not the band either. I'm just throwing that out there. I don't know. Anyways, we got about 15 minutes to go, gentlemen. Let's go ahead and have a little fun with a particular topic. I know normally that we don't stray. Well, we're not really straying from the football lexicon so much as, you know, there is an aspect of it that gets a lot of attention. And I saw this on one of the big name websites that they did a bracket for best football movies of all time. Now, and I know Weasel's like, you know, I get to talk smack on something. Yes. You know, and you can have at it, dude. You know, that's fine. But I'm going to say this right now. And maybe it's because I'm a man who's 6'5 and 300 and not a little puny runt or whatever. Rudy is not a good movie. That's right. I said it. Rudy is not a good movie. And you sad, sappy bastards who are voting in this freaking poll are probably going to say that it's the best football movie. And you're wrong.
They gave a number one seed.
Exactly. Weasel, you're leaving.
Rudy.
No, you got it wrong. It's Tebow.
Rudy, Rudy.
Are you one
Rudy.
Of these Rudy fans? Really, Weasel? Are you?
I just had to.
Oh, okay. You're just being a D-bag. Okay. What I'm getting to is this. See, I gave you permission to talk smack. It's okay. You're cool. But sorry, Chris is with me on this, too. Where do you stand on people claiming Rudy is the best football movie, Weasel?
I don't call it the best, but I thought it was a decent movie.
Well, I mean, look, you got to put it on the list.
It's a feel-good movie.
Well, yeah, it's a feel-good movie. Hell, it gets referenced everywhere. A true story, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, heck, it's even referenced in a show I watch on ESPN called The Newsroom, which is an epic show. And I hate Rudy. I shouldn't say I hate. I don't appreciate Rudy the movie as most people do. But the reference they make to the Rudy movie was a good one in Newsnight. I'm not going to say it because I want to ruin for anybody who hasn't seen season one. What I'm saying is this. The game where Rudy comes out and has an opportunity to step on the field, we're supposed to be moved by players who are suddenly trying real hard just to get this runt on the field. Forget about the fact that this team has foregone national championship competition and, you know, has lost games and is really kind of a disappointment overall for the year. They give a damn now to get this kid on the field. That's heartwarming. And then one of the main characters who's one of Rudy's friends in the movie is this player that's been disappointing up to this point in his career. And now it makes an amazing play up to his potential that he had the whole time just to get Rudy on the field. Is there anybody who and maybe this is just me, who if I'm the Notre Dame coach, I look at this kid make this play that he made for the long touchdown to get Rudy on the field and goes, 4 years and you give a damn now. Are you kidding me? Now, in truth, I know that it was the last in the year allegedly leading during that it was a new coach. So he wasn't there for all 4 years. But so for anyone gets me on that technicality, fine. But I don't know. Maybe that makes me stingy. But those are some realities that are conveniently Disneyed out of the movie. That's just me. I don't know. Anyways, we got about 11 minutes here. Chris, let's walk around. Best football movie. Question is that simple. Now, and just so you know how intense Chris was about this, he's like, do you want to put together a top five? I'm like, damn it, son. Take it easy.
I can do top five easy. I mean, top 10. Top. I don't know about top because there's some good ones on there. There's some funny ones. There's good ones. There's...
No, I'm not even looking at their bracket. I'm just talking about football movies you feel good about. I mean, we could go top three if you want. I'm down with that. I mean, you know, hell, we're only trying to spend 10 minutes on this. We're not looking to,
I know.
To move mountains. But go ahead, Chris. Give me thought. You know,
one, The Program.
Okay. I've never actually seen The Program, but I know it has Mike Tomlin in Omar Epps in it. So okay. I mean, you know, and you got they touch on a lot of off the field issues, like you got the one cat who's on steroids and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I remember there was one scene that made a lot of noise where, I shouldn't say scene, but they used it as a preview even, where the quarterback's laying in the middle of the road in traffic or whatever.
Yeah, they deleted that out.
Yeah, they deleted that scene out, right. was like, oh, this is how I handle pressure or something stupid like that. I mean, you know, whatever. I mean, at this point, Weasel, football movie. What do you got?
I'd say Remember the Titans was pretty good.
Right.
And let's see.
Well, I'm only looking. At, well, go ahead. Go ahead. Keep going.
Friday Night Lights.
Okay.
And Any Given Sunday was good.
Okay, now let's hit one of those individually. Like, Remember the Titans? I'm not going to say it was a bad movie. It was entertaining enough. It does better with a lot of the football stuff than other movies do. Like for example, an older one in the 80s, Wildcats. It's a good movie, but the football in it was garbage. Like, how many freaking games can these guys win off of returned field goals? Are ridiculous, just asinine plays. This team is so lucky it makes Brett Favre look like he was unfortunate with some of the stuff he threw. Except for that 1 year he did good with the Vikings. That was awesome. And, you're welcome, Weasel. I mean, I don't know. That, but I liked that part of the Remember the Titans, the movie. And of course, it's a good message it's putting out. But, I mean, look, that movie reminds me of another movie in Bedazzled in particular where the main character is Brandon Fraser, and he's getting interviewed as the tall basketball player, and he's all like, well, what'd you think of your game tonight? Well, you hope to play good, and you want to play good, and I think we played pretty good tonight. What's the comparison between the Remember the Titans and that scene of that movie? Cliches. It's a dang cliche. It's been done before. We've seen it 85 billion times. So Remember the Titans is a cliche with some good football scenes in it. Fun, good message and all that. I mean, hey, look, it passes the time. But now, what was it? What was the other ones you had?
Oh, Friday Night Lights.
Friday Night Lights was fun. I mean, there were some parts in it that I thought were kind of ridiculous. But, you know, Weasel just like shouting out how some chick's a 10. I can feel that.
Any Given Sunday.
Just
a fun movie.
Hold on. There's a lot of ways to describe Any Given Sunday. That mess is not fun. Are you kidding me? You got a dude that gets paralyzed. You got a dude that gets completely blasted within the first 5 minutes. But this movie's fun. Actually, no. The first two starting quarterbacks get blasted in the first 5 minutes, right? That movie is bitter as hell, but very legitimate. I appreciate Any Given Sunday.
Fun can mean entertaining.
No. I like what you're trying to do there. No. Fun is the Replacements. That's what I'm trying to tell you, boys. That's where it's at. The Replacements, is for as a football movie, first of all, it holds up.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the only other movie I've seen really hint at a football strike is The Last Boy Scout. People try to call that a football movie. I don't. I'm sorry. Just because Damon Wayans happens to be in it playing a former quarterback, so to speak, I don't think Last Boy Scout's a football movie. I'm sorry. That's just me. However, I mean, Footsteps Flacco and company doing what they do in The Replacements, that is a football movie. It is a fun football movie. And I'll tell you what, maybe I'm just that guy. I bought Gene Hackman as a football coach. And is there anyone in that movie who you did not buy in their particular role? Anybody? Now, I'll grant, the whole Nigel Gruff concept was a little ridiculous, but I've seen stranger stuff. I mean, look, if the real NFL can have a female kicker show up to the tryouts, why can't we have an English Premier soccer player who owns a pub fly over to the U.S. to be a kicker to pay off his debts? I'm with that. I don't know. Chris, you got any others?
Yeah, I got the original Longest Yard.
The original, you know, I like both Longest Yard movies, yeah. I'll be clear. But the original one is by far superior.
Right.
Not to mention, there's some scenes in there where, like, you picture, if they did this for real, someone's getting completely effed up. I mean, there's the montage, you do this, then you do this. And basically, the scene is saying, you're going to eff some up really bad. Got it? Got it. You know, I don't know. That's where I'm at. I mean, but yeah, The Longest Yard, football as football movies go, got to be mentioned. Better movie than Rudy, that's for certain. I mean, and that's overcoming adversity too. And you know, not just because you're some kid who wanted it really bad. You busted your butt against true adversity and showed them that you had just one chance. I'm about ready to make the William Wallace speech. Never mind. Chris, anything else?
I thought you were going Eminem
for Varsity Varsity Blues.
Yeah,
that one's pretty good.
You know, and that's what I was referencing earlier. 10, you know, yeah. I thought someone was going to say. There it is. I can't do it. I see. I never saw Friday Night. Well, I saw the end of Friday Night Lights, and honestly, you know, Weasel, if you say that's a fun movie, you're wrong too. But I mean, Varsity Blues, definitely a fun movie. I said Friday Night Lights was fun earlier because I got the two mixed up because all I could think about was a 10. But hey, wouldn't you? I mean, I'm the teacher in that movie. I'm yeah, that's not my fault.
And if you're on comedy, Necessary Roughness.
Oh yeah, imagine. I mean, let me be clear. First of all, any movie with Scott Bakula in it, yeah, that gets some damn points, right? I mean, well, you're about to say Sinbad too.
Sinbad in the '80s, come on.
That's the funniest 90s. He's been in a movie. Let's call it what it is, right? You know, because Andre is a vegetarian. No, but I don't know. Necessary Roughness, you're not going to get a lot of respect for that movie. I think, I don't know how high they seated it, but
They gave it a number two in one of the brackets.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot more respect than I expected to get, but I bet $50 it's an upset.
Follow me, Mr. Blake.
Yeah. Dude, if nothing else, you watch, if you don't want to watch the whole movie, watch the last game that they play. That is great time. That is a great time right there for comedy and inspiration and all that. It's a good time. One that we haven't mentioned here, and one that's probably going to be a guilty pleasure of all three of us, as we got 3.5 minutes left here, Little Giants. That's right. I said it. Yeah. Holds up as a kid's movie. Holds up as a kiddie football movie. I don't know, Chris.
I was about to say that. I'm like, if you haven't seen it before and you have kids, you got to see The Little Giants.
Absolutely. It's better than you think. Right. I promise you that.
When you have a play that's called The Annexation of Puerto Rico... got to be mentioned.
I thought that was every play that Weasel ever called where he's like doing triple blitzes and stuff. I don't know. Anyways.
Now there's a movie that's been like on top of most lists out there from 1971, Brian Song. Did y'all see that?
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned it. I'll tell you, I saw it in school, and the reason why it's not on my top list isn't because it's a bad movie. But yo, I don't watch movies to cry. That's not how I roll, dude. And that is some sad stuff. Don't you dare say that's a fun movie, Weasel. Don't you do. I mean, in all seriousness, yeah, I mean, you're right. Absolutely. I mean, yeah. Can anyone really diss that movie? No. Rudy? Rudy sucks. Brian Song? I'm okay with that. That's fine. If you have to pull, I don't blame you, Weasel. But like I said, I don't put it on my list because I try to avoid crying in movies. I'm more of a laugh kind of guy. I don't know. Anyway, so that's our venture into NFL, well, not NFL, but football movies in general. And, of course, you've been listening to the Student of the Game podcast here on the American Football Radio Network. You can go ahead and fire a tweet to me, Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, at the SOTG. The website is www.thesotg.com. And if you stay tuned here to the American Football Radio Network at 10 o'clock Eastern, more importantly, 7 o'clock Pacific, the NFL West recess is coming your way, talking plenty of preseason action for anything NFL in the Western United States. Look out for that. Then on Wednesday nights, I will be on the TSCRN with Andrew Glukov, former Student of the Game panelist. He will be leading off the OT with Andrew G. That's on the TSCRN. That's going to be a good time from 9 to 11 Eastern. And then on Thursday here on the American Football Radio Network, from 9 to 11, although I hear it may be moved when the season starts, so we stop, you know, talking over Thursday night football.
90
good
seconds.
News for me, is, of course, the American Football Radio Network weekly show. Looks to be a good time all the way around. Gentlemen, Chris, drop your tweet on them real quick so they can holler at you if they'd like.
Yeah, it's at Chris J. Rankin.
There you go. Weasel.
At Weasel, W-E-A-S-E-L. The SOTG.
Can somebody please tweet Weasel? Because, like, I don't think he's used his Twitter since, like, 1976 or something like that.
1976.
I love you, Weasel. Anyways.
When he was just a glimmer in his mom's eye. He
hasn't used well, it since then. Just wow. I don't know how to compete with that, so I won't. I mean, what can you do at that point? Just craziness. Craziness, I tell you. Anyways, that'll wrap it up for us. We'll see you again in another 2 weeks. Until then, class dismissed.